Good morning. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show on WPR News. And we start our show today with a look at fashion. Now, even if you say you're not fashionable, that too is a fashion. It's like saying I'm not going to choose. That too is a choice. And when we talk about fashion, whether or not we know it, we're probably all involved in the growth of fast fashion. Just for example here, McKinsey & Company, a U.S.-based global management consulting firm, in their annual State of the Fashion report for this year, says global apparel consumption is projected to rise 63% by 2030. That'll be about over 100 million tons of clothes annually. And fast fashion consumers are quick to throw them away. Some estimates suggest that consumers treat the lowest-priced garments as just about disposable, getting rid of them after as few as 7 wears. For every 5 garments produced, McKinsey says the equivalent of 3 end up in a landfill or are incinerated each year. And total greenhouse gas emissions from the production of this fast fashion clocks in at 1.2 billion tons a year. And that is, according to McKinsey, more emissions than all international flights and maritime ships combined. So what is the alternative to fast fashion? Have you heard of slow fashion? Dr. Eric Brote is the co-founder of GNU Incorporated. He's also the Associate Dean of Native Health at Oregon Health and Science University School of Medicine in Portland. And Dr. Brote is from Wisconsin. So, what do you want to know about slow fashion? And what do you have to say about where your clothes come from and how conscious you are about it? What are you willing to pay for the clothes you wear and the fashion you have, whether it's fashionable or not? Join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us, talk@wpr.org. And Dr. Eric Brote, welcome to The Larry Mueller Show.
Oh, good morning, Lee. It's a pleasure to be able to join you.
Yeah, I'm really interested in GNU because you hail from Wisconsin, but give us the history of this clothing company.
Well, like you mentioned earlier, both my wife and I are physicians. So I'm a hospitalist in family medicine and also a dean of Native Health here at the medical school in Oregon. And then my wife is a women's pelvic cancer surgeon. And what happened was, as we did the transition from our residency training, which is kind of like you're already a physician, but you have to train in your specialty for a few years, we began to think a lot more about like who we are as people, because we'd gotten engaged, who we wanted to be, but then also thinking a lot about our relatives and our family and listening to stories. And it really started from us like hearing their stories and knowing like what they wore and used and kind of adorned themselves with, within like a structure and function way. And it really got us thinking about buying better things and buying less of them so that we could have things that would literally be with us through time. And it's funny that you bring this up, and some of the stats just kind of triggered my memory a little bit, but the pair of boots I just got out this morning was the very first purchase I made like that.
How long ago was that?
16 years ago. And the second pair is 15 years ago. So I bought one pair of black boots and one pair of brown boots. One pair is from Red Wing in Minnesota. Yep. And they started making the original styles again. And it's the style that one of my great-great or great-great-great grandfathers wore functionally within the railroad so that they didn't get burnt by the coals that were coming out. Right. And so, and the other pair was actually made in New Berlin, Wisconsin by Russell Moccasin Company. And what's amazing is that they have repaired, both of those companies have repaired both of those pair of boots for me. Like you mentioned, something gets thrown out, like three out of 5 garments gets thrown out within the first year or whatever. I have had each of those pairs of boots repaired no fewer than 3 times. And so if anybody's looking for literally one of the best boots that you can buy in America, look no further than Wisconsin in New Berlin. Go up and visit the Russell Moccasin Company. They are amazing.
And amazing. This would be the epitome of slow fashion, right, Dr. Brote? And this is where your company, GNU, fits right in.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's what we're trying to do is be more intentional and to create higher quality. And I think that's been the strange thing about being in the fashion ecosystem, because the way people have been able to, frankly, make a lot of money is by exploiting the earth, exploiting people, and then making garments and items that are intentionally supposed to be to break down.
Yeah.
So that it's like an intentional or planned obsolescence. Like, people don't want you to make a coat that you wear for more than one, maybe two seasons. And I think what we are actually doing is run the other end of the spectrum, making things of the highest quality we can find materials of, finding those materials as close to our home as possible, and then working with the best local partners we can find so that people can wear our garments for decades. And, you know, people are like, well, how do you even know that? Because we've been around only for 10 years, for like 15 years, but then making products for 13 that are apparel, that are like rag or cut and sew. And just 2 weeks ago, someone who bought one of our jackets 11 years ago, one of our coats 11 years ago, sent us a card saying, I didn't believe that I was going to have this coat for as long as you said when I first bought it. But here I am over 10 years later, and it is the only coat that I have purchased in the last 10 years.
And honestly, Dr. Broat, yeah. If you're like me, and if that other person is like us, our favorite coat is the oldest coat. Our favorite pair of boots are the ones our feet have broken in ourselves. Our favorite pair of jeans are the ones that match us completely because they've become a part of us. We've worn them so often. At least that's the way I see it. I always bristle at new clothes because they're not mine yet.
Well, and they don't have the memory of all that you've done on your journey.
Yes.
And I think that's the beautiful thing about buying clothes that can last over time, is that literally your story becomes etched, faded into your clothing. Mm. Every scuff on a boot, it's from something, and it's part of your story. And it's like, you know, I have the original Gnu coat, and I just showed it to one of our main partners is the Pendleton Woolen Mill here in Oregon. And I was up talking to their new CEO and their vice president and the folks. And I brought in the very first Gnu coat we ever made, like the piece that was a serendipitous, happy accident that like launched us. And I can see wear and scuffs and tear on there from, it's like a piece that conjures up memories of being out on the edge of the earth in the Bering Sea, where I wore that coat in the Aleutian Islands, walking the streets of Prague, like things that, you know, just like I've worn that coat everywhere.
Right. And it's imprinted with you, and it's become part of you. And, you know, Gnu has this slogan, wear with spirit. And Dr. Broat, you sort of are alluding to it, but what does that mean for Gnu clothing?
I think that, like, for us, it's like be who you are in the clothing that becomes part of you. And it's more than just like some like catchy tagline or something, but like we really want you to be able to wear these things over time.
Yeah.
And for them to represent you and to become completely unique. It's like when you buy a pair of our jeans, on day one, they're one of 200, because we do very small batches at a time. But on day 30, they're one of one already, because they started to get creases that no one else will put in, and they started to get wear. They started, you know, like if you're a dad of a newborn, all of a sudden the knees start getting worn first. Or whether you're someone who likes to work on trucks or on a farm, like the top of the thighs get worn. If you're someone who rides those great motorcycles that are made in Milwaukee, your other areas get worn, right? And it's just a beautiful thing, because it goes from a one of 200 to a one of one in a very short amount of time, and it only gets better with time and with the radical idea of repairing them. Rather than discarding, be radical and repair them so that it doesn't take more cotton, doesn't take more, you know, water, doesn't take more depletion from the soil. Like, it's just amazing. And it becomes more beautiful, in my opinion, over time.
Dr. Eric Broad, our guest, co-founder of GNU Clothing Company, also Associate Dean of Native Health at Oregon Health and Science University. And you can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us, talk@WPR.org. Evidently, Russell Moccasin's in Berlin, not New Berlin.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. All right. We got that correction out there. So you mentioned your jeans, and I'm curious about the design process, the manufacturing, and eliminating exploitation in the entire system and how you go about that conscientiously, Dr. Broad.
So number one, in fashion, if you're small, even if you're a very large company, it's very difficult to ensure that your entire supply chain is completely watertight with all of those issues, mm-hmm. number one. It's very difficult. But if you are intentional about it, it takes a lot more time. And these are questions going back to as far as where was the cotton grown? And for making a pair of jeans, it begins with us identifying where the cotton actually comes from. And people are like, well, why is that important? Is it like a tomato that's grown someplace really close to your house and tastes better? It's not because of that. It's actually more nefarious. It's because about a fifth of the cotton is tied to enslavement. And that is just really difficult.
So even sourcing, most people don't
think about it.
Even sourcing your raw material can be a challenge. So just to get off the ground.
Yep. You have to. So, like, one thing that we do is we make sure that 0%, none of our cotton, absolutely none of it, comes from a certain region in the world where people are forced to do the planting, cultivating, picking, and processing of that cotton.
And that's not easy.
And that is a fact.
Oh.
Yeah. And it is not easy. But the thing is that the challenge is that most people, I don't think they really care. or it's so far out of their minds, or it's so far out of their mind that what matters is you can get a shirt for 99 cents or $1.99. Let me tell you, the cost of $1.99 or a 99-cent shirt is profound. And it's usually because it's added up in the amount of water that was used, the kind of pesticides and like the soils that were killed doing it. Maybe the people who are being exploited to be able to produce, cultivate, harvest the cotton. Maybe the working conditions aren't that great in putting it together and then shipping it around the world. You know, I mean, the difference between shipping stuff via like rail and boat as far as BTUs is way, way less than it is to ship things via air or truck even.
Do you find it a challenge to manufacture in the United States, or is that something that's been easier for GNU?
It's both.
Okay.
And it's like, what do you mean by that? Well, it's both. So on one aspect, because of our careers and our day jobs, it is easier for us to manufacture in the United States because we can go and visit people. It is easier for me to drive to Washougal, Washington, or Pendleton, Oregon, to go visit where fabrics are made than it is for me to fly to India.
Right.
It's just easier. So, I mean, there's certain parts that are easier like that. It is easier for me to fly down to L.A. or to drive or ride my bike to a place in Portland where we have things made than it is to fly to, like, North Java.
So what's the challenge then?
The challenge is that the manufacturing of clothing in the United States has not been invested in for decades. In fact, it's basically a mass divestment. So I think it's something, I don't know if you've got the most recent stats on this, but it's like less than 3% of all clothes that people purchase and wear in the United States are made here. and it didn't used to be that way. As recently as like 1980, it was very, very, very different.
Dr. Eric,
and now, yeah.
I just want to reintroduce you and get some of our questions and emails on the air here, Eric.
Sure.
Dr. Eric Broad, co-founder of GNU Clothing Company.
Yeah.
Let's go to Nina in Menasha next at 1-800-642-1234.
Nice.
Nina, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call. First of all, you had mentioned that I just want to make a comment on, you know, people don't care. And I think it's all about education. I recently just watched a PBS show. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but
you are.
I think it's called Human Footprint. Something along that line. I mean, I'm in my car. I sure. parked because I wanted to. But the photographs, the screenshots I took, of that episode were dumbfounding. And I think maybe in social sciences in our schools or something, we can start educating or have just a little bit on, you know, I don't know how that works, but. Because I'm old, I'm like 50.
No, I get it. I'm old like 52, Nina. And it was called Human Footprint on PBS. And you can find it at pbs.org/show/Human Footprint for more. But it goes to show that we're not necessarily thinking about this. But do you see, Dr. Brote, do you see a difference between generations in their understanding of the impact of their clothing?
You know, it's, again, yes and no. Huh. So it's like you have people that when they're surveyed say that, you know, over 90% of people want to buy clothing that's made in America or made locally or made with the best materials possible. But then in practice, what happens is most everybody makes their decisions on price.
Yeah. Well, here's,
and I think that's just where it, like, sales and prices and whatever. And so it's like, in theory and in people's minds and hearts, they want to do one thing, but in practice, it's we've been trained to do another.
Here's an email from Veronica who asks, "What about folks who can't afford to spend the money for high prices, but looking for long-lasting clothes or footwear to wear?"
You brought this up earlier, and we sell clothing.
Yeah.
Okay. But if you want to make the least impact on the world and buy the toughest clothes that you can for the most affordable price, do you know where you get them? Where do you get them?
I would go Farm and Fleet.
No, you go to a thrift store because these are garments that have already been around for 10, 15, 20 years. They're strong enough already.
Are you
they
ready?
They lasted over time.
Dr. Brote, I actually have an email of a poem here for you from Michael. Michael, thank you for the poetry. "When you buy something new, more greenhouse gases you do spew. So save a dime and skip the prime. It's thrift store time."
Michael. Yeah, it is. And like, if you want to, literally, and so the person's name is Michael?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And people are like, "Are you crazy? You sell clothes." And no, I'm not crazy. If you cannot, if you want to do something that is about the earth first and your human footprint on the earth, don't buy a single new pair of anything if you can help it. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, because you are the co-founder of a clothing company.
It is. It's crazy. But I would buy underwear and socks.
Wow.
And everything else. If I want to have the least amount of footprint, human footprint, that is how you do it. You reuse, you recycle, you repair.
Yeah.
I think of those boots, right? Like, what if I was like burning through like, you know, 2-3 pairs of shoes?
And some people do.
A year.
Yeah.
Oh, some people burn through more, especially if you like do running and walking, and people have shoes for rainy days and people have shoes for sunny days and. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I do have a question about denim, though,
sure.
Because I believe this has been a debate that's gone back and forth, and I've heard different stories with people putting their blue jeans in the freezer or never putting them in the wash. How do you care for your jeans, Dr. Brote?
I love them.
Well, that's easy.
So the thing is like, I think denim is one of the most romantic fabrics in the world.
Huh.
And there's nothing like it because of the way it's dyed, and because of the way that the bonding of the indigo to the cotton works, like it's like a living, breathing thing. It's like, have you looked through an old window before that's like 100 years old?
Oh yeah.
And it's kind of
warped.
It's a little warped, and it's like it's thicker on the bottom than it is on the top because it's actually still fluid at some level. That's kind of like the dye on jeans.
Wow.
And so what I do, just like with any garment of clothing, so this goes back to Michael too. So if I do buy new clothing, I wash them as little as possible. And I'm also not obsessive and I don't want to stink. Okay.
So right.
It's like what I do with my jeans is I wear them all the time. I even wear jeans to the office here, and I hang them up at the end of the day. I don't fold them and put them in the freezer. I don't do those kind of things. when it is time to wash my jeans, I soak them in cold water with a scant amount of detergent and a scant amount of a substance called borax.
Yep.
And when I say scant, I'm talking like less than a teaspoon.
Wow.
And I let them soak, and then I let them line dry. And so if you don't want to eliminate your clothes as fast, hand washing and line drying. I mean, just look at the lint piles that come out of the dryer when you're done. It's more convenient to do that, but it's like so what I do is I hand wash, I line dry, and if I do ever wash my jeans in the washing machine, I pull them inside out.
Okay.
I wash them on cold with scant detergent, and I turn off the spin cycle. So I use like real indigo dyed jeans. And so because it's natural and fluid, if you don't turn off the spin cycle, you'll get little polka dotting on them, because in the spin cycle, it pulls the indigo dye to the little holes where the water exits the drum while it's spinning. And so what I do is I still line dry them. And I turn off the spin cycle if I'm washing them in the washing machine.
That is good to know, and I've heard any number of ways of people trying to keep their blue jeans for as long as possible because it becomes a part of them. Dr. Brote, with the time we have left with your GNU clothing company, would you tell us a little bit about the GNU Impact Fund?
So the GNU Impact Fund, we identify or work with an entity that we feel is making a big difference. So in the past, this has looked like, because we're small, right? We're not like a Fortune 500 company. We're not like a top 100 company, right? Like, we are a small business. And so what we've done is we identify a group or organization or foundation or someone to work with around an issue. And I think the most significant of this has been what we did with the Warm Springs Nation here in Oregon, where we were approached by a concrete company. They're called Collective Concrete, and then a skate shop called Tactics, who had a pro skater or a sponsored skater who was from the Warm Springs Nation and from the community there, and their skate park had gotten old.
Mm-hmm.
And next thing you know, like, we came up with some resources to help build a new skate park. But what happened is we got people really excited about it. And so we got a Grammy Award-winning band, Portugal the Man, became involved. Tony Hawk, he's a pro skater who has the Tony Hawk Foundation, and it's called the Skate Park Project, got involved. The Roundhouse Foundation in Central Oregon, that is derivative of the Columbia Sportswear family, they got involved. And we got everybody together, and the sum was much greater than our parts, and it was awesome. That's the GNU Impact Fund. So we've been able to leverage a small amount of funding that we generate from sales every year into these larger, bigger projects that have impact. And then the other thing that we have been supporting is the Northwest Native American Center of Excellence here at the medical school, where every student that they get into this one program called the YEAST Post-Bac Pathway, every student that they get in generates a $1 million a year return on investment. It's actually like, for every dollar we spend, it generates just under $1,000.
Wow.
For a community, in a community, because of the impact of having a physician go and work in a rural or tribal area in rural Oregon.
I mean, sure.
it's profound, where it's like, yeah, I'll give you a dollar if it generates $1,000 for a tribal community.
And the bigger
and that's
picture,
an easy lift for us.
Yeah, and the bigger picture, isn't that what we're talking about with slow fashion? Is it's an investment up front for saving money in the long run, as opposed to buying a $50 pair of shoes every 6 months. You buy a $300 pair of boots that lasts 15 years, and you tell me who the economically savvy person is here.
Yep, exactly. And I think over time, especially the Russell Moccasin boot, I remember purchasing, I think those boots cost me north of $500. And at the time, it was the most I'd ever spent on a pair of shoes ever. And literally, here I am, 13 years later, they're the most comfortable. I can't hardly buy another pair of boots because they have formed to my foot.
They are your boots.
I still remember the gentleman that measured my foot. I believe his name was Ralph Farabricius, and he had been doing this for like 63 or 64 years.
Wow.
And the stories he told me as I stood upon this little, it was like a little wooden box that he measured my feet and took these 13 different measurements on. And then after I got down, he like showed me pictures of like presidents and senators and, you know, like thought leaders and innovators that had stood on that exact same box.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like, oh, man.
Yeah. Like, on the shoulders of giants. Like, Dr. Eric Brill, we are out of time, but I want to thank you for sharing your work and giving us an alternative to fast fashion and alternative to exploitation. GNU Clothing Company, and we've got a link on our website at WPR.org/Larry where you can find more about this clothing company. And Derek, Dr. Brill, thanks again for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate all you guys are doing back there in the great state of Wisconsin.
You bet. And when we continue, we'll take a look at the fashion trends this fall, and regardless of your age or fashion sense, how you can fit into them or how you can make them fit into your own personal fashion. With styling consultant Stephanie Taylor joining us next. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and you are listening to The Larry Mueller Show. Good morning, I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Larry today on The Larry Mueller Show, and we're talking about fashion this hour, and let's take a moment to talk about Larry's fashion. Because whether it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, I can tell you may not see him every day, but we get to. His fashion is pure and simple. Wisconsin Public Radio. From the socks to the hat, the shirt, if they made pants, he'd be wearing those. Couldn't find a more basic fashion style than Larry Mueller's because he is decked out from toes to the head in WPR gear each and every day. We can attest to that. But if you don't have all the WPR t-shirts dating back almost 60 years, then perhaps you need another little fashion sense of your own. And that's why we're joined today by Stephanie Taylor, who is the owner of Styled by Stephanie. She's a personal stylist and her business provides styling and organization. She's based out of Green Bay. And Stephanie, welcome to the Larry Mueller Show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So, and I'm fascinated with fashion because I think most folks in Wisconsin think, well, I don't have any fashion sense. But isn't that in their own way a fashion sense itself?
I mean, it definitely is. Fashion is a mindset. It's an expression of oneself. And sometimes it's kind of hard when you talk about trends and you look at whether it's marketing while you're watching TV or you're shopping. It feels like there's an expectation of what you should look like.
Yes.
And trying to get out of that is not always easy.
Yeah, exactly. So tell us a little bit about your fashion philosophy, Stephanie, where it comes from and how you style it for each and every person that you work with.
Well, it truly is like a personal experience. I'm unlike a lot of other stylists because I truly believe that it's a reflection of self. Mm-hmm. So I really try to, I feel like I am a life coach as well on top of it because I believe it starts from within. So really opening people's minds up to what makes them feel comfortable. So many people have this misconception like, oh, I need to, you know, they have this like dream piece like, oh, I'm going to fit in this one day when it's like, no, we're going to make the clothes fit you. You don't fit into the clothes. The clothes fit onto you.
Thank you.
Like, trying to change that mindset. So I do feel like my philosophy is like, let's work on the mindset. Let's work on like what makes you comfortable, and then now let's present it and how shall we present it and what makes you comfortable. And everybody has a different body style, so it's about learning to love yours.
Fashion is about learning to love yours. I don't think I've ever heard fashion explained that way, but in that, when you explain it like that, Stephanie, it speaks to me. But if I'm not mistaken, comfort as style does seem to be some sort of trend that, and maybe it's just because I'm on a college campus, but most folks seem to be dressing for comfort these days, or at least so it seems to me.
No, they definitely are. And that's why, like, even coming into fall, some of the biggest trends are taking those sophisticated looks and wearing, say, like, sneakers and tennis shoes with it, with blazers and layering. But taking some of these sophisticated looks and making it comfy is really, truly what's happening right now, I believe.
What are some of the other trends you're seeing, Stephanie, for fall, and how do they apply to folks in Wisconsin?
So, you know, trends all over the country, all over the world are different. And for some reason, I find that Wisconsin isn't always the, like, like the fastest trending state. So with that, even like when it comes to men's fashion, I'm noticing that a lot of those tight skinny jeans are going completely out of style. A lot of people are trying to get...
What a relief.
I know. Some of those are, but yes, I definitely think that the wide leg, like the bigger styles are coming back for not only men, but women as well. Especially in our youth, like it's about a lot of the baggy pants, tighter tops. When it comes to like middle age or business casual, pencil skirts for women are huge. A lot of those high-waisted pencil skirts with the button-down, say fleece flannel with sneakers, a lot of that is coming in. I know it sounds crazy, but animal print is big, real big.
Wait, and it feels like- wait a minute. Wait a minute. When did animal prints come back?
I feel like within the last year or so, and I like bought it for so long. You know, when we're younger, we see what our parents and our grandmas and our family wears, or I'm just, and I honestly believe what goes around comes around. So fashion trends just kind of like filter through. And yes, animal print is huge. And I feel like brown is the new black.
Wow.
Yeah, like a lot of those warm tones, and it kind of makes sense with fall and things along those lines.
Yeah.
But I mean, even without that, you know, the fox fur is huge and vivid colors.
Stephanie, I wanted to ask you, because the last half hour we talked about slow fashion versus fast fashion and how you fit your fashion sense into your own conscience and shop wisely and look for things that may last longer. How can I go about incorporating my, you know, my sensibilities, my conscience when it comes to fashion and clothing?
That, again, I feel like comes down to that mindset, that inner, it's what you tell yourself. If you tell yourself, well, because there's always quality, you know, when you pay those higher prices, you're paying for that quality, that durability. You're paying sometimes for the, it's hard to find, this is one in a few pieces type of thing. So if that's something you want, then you have to tell yourself, like, this is what I want. This is worth it. But it's that mindset of, I can't do it. I can't afford it. I'm going to get this cheaper version, when really you're only going to be able to maybe wear it once or twice before it just doesn't look the same, doesn't fit the same, doesn't come out the dryer the same, the colors are bleeding. It really comes down to that mindset of what you want and what, and it's kind of like you're, I don't want that to come out the wrong way. Thank God I thought about that, because I was going to say a value, because, you know, it's investing in yourself too.
Yeah.
So the more that you kind of fall in love with yourself and see that value within yourself, you're going to be able to spend that extra money because it's worth it. You're pretty much putting yourself on a higher pedestal, so to speak. Not pedestal, but if that makes sense.
No, it absolutely does. You're not just investing in yourself. You're investing in your environment. You're investing in others' workplace conditions. And here's a question that I think a lot of people struggle with. How much is too much? How much clothes do you really need, Stephanie?
You are asking a stylist, right? there is never too much.
I should have seen that coming.
You know, like the only thing sometimes that I can go through is when do you want to recycle it out? You know, get that out of your closet. And a lot of the times I will have people like wear, because some people don't like to repeat outfits, and it's about mixing and matching different outfits as well and falling in love with your current closet, right? So say there's like, you don't do laundry for like 2 weeks, right? And you're noticing certain things in your closet you are just not going to, you're just not gravitating to, you have not even looked at that. Those are the items that I recommend just taking out of your closet right away. Those aren't even useful at this point. Let's just add something new to that.
Wow. So if it's 2 weeks on the rack or in the dresser, maybe it's time to consider making some more space.
Yes, like I definitely do see that, like, because, you know, we all have our favorite go-to items. I am a very strong believer in key pieces and different colors, whether it's different blazers to go with different type of slacks or skirts over a dress. I just feel that there's a lot of ways to use more your items in different concepts. So I do try to tell people that to switch the outfits up doesn't necessarily mean you have to buy something new. It means that maybe we just have to look at what you have a little differently and pair it up. And maybe you just need one new little shirt to go under everything you have. And I love putting things together for people that they already have. So.
Yes, yes. Finding what's already there and putting them together in new ways. Stephanie Taylor is the owner of Styled by Stephanie, based out of Green Bay, a personal stylist providing organizational and styling tips for those in need. She's based out of Green Bay. And if you have a question for Stephanie about fashion trends or what's in your closet, how many pairs of pants you have or need, you can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. What fashion trends do you see in Wisconsin on the cusp of fall? You can also email us, talk@WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Today, and you are listening to The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today on WPR News. And coming up after noon, Mary Mellum's back to help answer all of your tax questions with a tax deadline right around the corner, if you didn't know. And coming up tomorrow on Garden Talk, we hear from the author of the book, The Cook's Garden. Also tips on freezing veggies and canning tomatoes. And Diana Elfuth will return to Garden Talk tomorrow. That's right here on WPR News tomorrow from 11 to 1. But right now we're talking to Stephanie Taylor, owner of Styled by Stephanie, based out of Green Bay. And if you have questions about fall fashions, 1-800-642-1234. Or what to do with your wardrobe, you can email us, talk@WPR.org. And Stephanie, you mentioned before, and we were kind of laughing about it, that Wisconsin rarely is on the cusp of fashion trends. And thinking about it, I got to say, I kind of like that about Wisconsin. Some trends are meant to go fast and disappear. And I like that we don't pick up on them. Kind of like old men in skinny jeans. I'm glad that's falling by the wayside. But isn't there something to be said for not joining just the latest fads and trends to see where they lead first?
I mean, there is something behind that, but I do feel that you gravitate to the trends that, like, just stand out to you, you know? And to be honest, one of the struggles I do find in Wisconsin is some clients that want to stay up with trends, but then it's hard to find them in Wisconsin. So then going about, I'm a big thrifter, so I believe so strongly in thrifting and getting items that you like and making them into something completely new. So I like redesigning pieces and making custom pieces as well. So I just feel that it's so individually based that it's hard to say.
No, that makes absolute sense. But also when it comes to like being age appropriate, is there such a thing when it comes to age appropriate fashion? Could a young person be dressed as too old, and could somebody my age be dressed as obviously too young?
So So again, like, in perspective, I'm sure people could say yes, right? But fashion is an expression of self. So age is nothing but a number. Say you're 55, but you feel 25 and you feel confident in what you're wearing. There, I don't feel you're dressing too young. If you are in high school and you are sophisticated, dressing in, say business attire, but you look like you're maybe 30 or you got somewhere to go. Like, if that, you know, so for me, I really, truly try to knock down those barriers with the people I talk to, getting the outside voices out of your head saying, well, that looks too old on you. You're too old for this, or you're too. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not really into, like, younger children exposing themselves. Right. You know, I don't necessarily support. It's not that I don't support it, because you can be comfortable in your own skin and confident however you shine. But for me, I would say there is no dressing too old or too young. You know, it is personal.
Well, and maybe it's a gender thing, because I keep pointing to the old man in skinny jeans, and maybe it's just because I see dudes and I'm like, well, I'm glad that's not me. But at the same time, when I'm thinking about my own fashion, what I'm thinking about is something that transcends trends. I'm trying to find something classic that I can wear for years that will never fall out of style. And yet maybe perhaps on the other side of that equation is never quite in style, Stephanie.
Like, to be honest with that, I always come to a lot of, like, for men, getting things tailored and custom made is really impactful, like, because those are things that can stay with you for, and they're made specifically for you. Even with women, sometimes they'll have a favorite piece, and our bodies change almost every 6 to 9 months. Sometimes getting used to that fluctuation isn't always easy, and then you start body shaming. So I like to take things and make them personal to you. So for me, I feel like that solves a lot of that for people, especially like when it comes to key pieces. I mean, you can buy a khaki pair of pants, black pants, blue pants, and say a white pair of pants, and you can pretty much make, in my, like, about 2 weeks of different outfits.
Sure.
Mind you are going to repeat those pants with different shirts and tops and different looks, where you can make it look completely different every single time. Or say you do like tight skinny jeans and they're going out of trend. We can still get you in tight skinny jeans that maybe fit you properly, that, you know, make you feel more confident. It's truly...
it keeps going back to, it's not about what's going down the catwalk. It's not what's happening at New York Fashion Week. It's not what's happening in Paris. It's what's happening inside you, and what these clothes do to you, and how what you wear impacts how you feel.
Yes, and that's what kind of makes me stand out, because a lot of stylists and stuff, it isn't about that.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I truly believe, you say you have a big business meeting, say you are going to meet out with friends, say you're going on your first date, say you want to impress a woman or anything that's going on, if you put on something that makes you feel good, or you're going to go about that in such confidence where a lot of insecurities kind of fade away, and you get to be more in the moment and be yourself. And I find magic in that.
Yeah.
And I was in retail for so many years, and I'll never forget working at boutiques and having customers come to me regularly, and how happy I felt when they found that one piece that literally they looked in the mirror and lit up.
Yeah.
So when I decided to be an entrepreneur and I'm like, what am I going to do? I remembered the things that I was passionate about, the things that drove me, the things that inspired me. And that inspired me. And I was like, well, how can I put that into others? And then that's how Style by Stephanie was born. And I just kind of fell in love with it. And it snowballed into something that I never imagined.
And it sounds like a lot of fun, because you're just there to make people feel good about who they are. I mean, it sounds like a great gig. Let's go to your questions for our guest, Stephanie Taylor, owner of Styled by Stephanie in Green Bay. We'll start with Becky in Madison. Becky, good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Great. How are you two doing today?
Good. What's up?
Good. Well, this is a fun conversation for me, Stephanie, because I have a similar background, and aesthetics, I worked with CBS affiliate here in Madison as a stylist, and then I went into room styling for homes as well. But I'm in my late 60s now, and I do find that I'm changing kind of my desire about what I'm wearing and what I look good in. And I tell you what, the monochrome look is always a look that creates a compliment. And it comes from men, women, young, old. Wow, that's a great outfit. Or the other color that I wear that I get tons of compliments, beige and white or black and white. Seems simple, but that's kind of what I'm finding.
Sounds classic, though, Becky. It sounds like one of those things that sort of transcends the trends, Stephanie.
No, it definitely is. And she touched point on those classic looks. Like, they are comfort. They are, those colors bring out some of the best parts of our bodies and our silhouette. And especially when you talk about the monochrome, like, I definitely agree with that.
Stephanie, there is another fashion trend in Wisconsin, and I'm not sure anybody else would think of it as a fashion, but it is certainly a statement about what people say about who they are. And it goes back to actually to Larry Mueller, who's decked out in his WPR gear every day. And it's people who wear gifts as their wardrobe. That's, you know, that their wardrobe came from Christmas and birthdays, that their wardrobe came from, you know, world's greatest granddad. And they wear that with pride, or some silly T-shirt that somebody gave them, and they're wearing that out to the store. And I see that an awful lot in Wisconsin. And it took me a while to understand that, you know, these are things that are given, and that's why it makes them feel good when they wear them, even if it is maybe a little silly seeming.
No, definitely. That's why I love layering and mixed matching things to include those pieces. Sometimes you don't even have to. They're gems in themselves, especially around Christmas time with some of these sweaters that I see. I absolutely love it. Or what is it where you give those funny gifts at?
White elephant gifts?
Yes. Those. You get some really interesting pieces there too. And I'm just like, how can you not rock this? And just be like, this, I'm one of a kind today. Nobody's going to be having this, you know?
Not only that, but that it's not something I went out and sought for myself. It's something that somebody sought for me. They wanted me to have this, so I wear it because of the way it feels, because it was gifted to me. It means something because it meant something to somebody else.
Yes, and like, they saw this and thought of me.
Yes.
Like, I have four daughters, and my oldest daughter, we were shopping a few months ago, and I put on the, because even me being a stylist, I still struggle sometimes with my own body and my own things. And I put on this dress, and I was just like, oh, but my daughter, she's like, it looks so good on you. And she ended up buying it, and now it's like, she saw something I didn't, and now I'm more confident in the dress than I thought I ever would be. So.
That's beautiful. Yeah, and that's I see it all everywhere I go, and I think it's a sort of fashion sense that makes me smile, because it means so much more than the catwalks and the fashion weeks.
Yes.
And it means, you know, it says something about who we are as a people, as does your fashion sense, Stephanie. So as we're going out this fall, and I've got about a minute here, what should we be looking for in terms of making us feel good about what we wear?
Honestly, I think a lot of modern fabrics like the denim and leather are really coming in. You see a lot of that when it comes to colors. There's the bold primary colors that are really big. And I'm big with florals. For me, I'm like, that's a theme that not everybody likes. I always go to florals. I'm not going to lie, but
that's, there you go. Styled by Stephanie. It's animal prints and florals.
Yes. Oh my God.
It's beautiful. Stephanie, I love your fashion, and thank you for sharing it with us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you.
Stephanie Taylor is the owner of Styled by Stephanie, a personal stylist, and her business provides styling and organizational support. Stephanie's based out of Green Bay, and you can find her business as a link to our website at wpr.org/Larry. After the news, we take your tax questions at 1-800-642-1234 with our guest, Mary Mellum. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and you're listening to WPR News. Good afternoon. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and you're listening to The Larry Miller Show on WPR News. We're going to take a look at taxes for the next hour and help answer some of your tax questions with a 30-year Wisconsin tax expert. And when we're talking taxes, it's the way we spend for things we're willing to pitch in and pay for. And if you were to try to get a big picture on it, you would say perhaps government is just an extension, an organized extension of community that tries to wrangle answers to two questions. One, what are we willing to pitch in and pay for? Two, how in the fairest way possible are we going to pitch in and pay for it? And taxes is where we try to answer the question, how are we going to, in the fairest way possible, pitch in and pay for it? Well, a new, big, beautiful bill is changing our federal taxes. We have a federal tax deadline on the horizon, and we've got Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals joining us to help handle it all. If you've got tax questions, you can join our conversation over the next hour by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. And Mary, welcome back to the Larry Miller Show.
Thank you, Lee. It's nice to be here.
And let's start with that one big, beautiful bill, which has now been signed into law by President Donald Trump, and what that means for our own taxes. What are the big changes that you see, Mary?
Oh, the big, beautiful bill. Well, one of the things that I want to say before we talk about what changed, the big, beautiful bill allowed a lot of things to stay the same. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 changed the way we do taxes and the way we pay big time. Had it been allowed to revert back to the way it was, there would have been a lot more people paying a lot more tax. The big, beautiful bill was an extension of that to start with. Our tax rates stayed the same. A lot of the benefits like the child tax credit and things like that were preserved because of the big, beautiful bill. On top of that, there are some other things that changed. For instance, things that people are talking about, the no tip, no tax on tips provision, mm-hmm. the overtime provision, increasing child tax credit. There is a provision for deduction of car loan interest. There's just a number of things that have changed, not maybe totally in the way people wanted them to change, or maybe it doesn't affect everyone because a lot of them have phase outs on it. But for a lot of middle class people, this means that they're not going to pay more taxes the way that they would have if it had not been passed.
All right. And with that, we will start going to the questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. And we'll start with Dave and Toma. Dave, good afternoon.
Yeah, hi. I have a question. I'm inheriting a house, and I don't want the house. But, well, I'm inheriting from somebody that died.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, I can't sell it until I transfer it to my name, I don't think. And then if I transfer it to my name and sell it, I mean, there's no taxes due on an inheritance. But if I sell it in my name, do I have to pay capital gains then?
Okay, I think that's a really good question, Dave. First of all, if in the will you inherited the house, that means transferring it to your name. The sale of the house, if it is not something you want, is a taxable event. In other words, you're going to get a 1099 or a 1098S that marks the sale that says Dave sold it for this much. It goes on the tax return, but here's where the inheritance is not taxable. The inheritance itself, the passing of the property to you, is not a taxable event in that in this example. However, with the passing of the house, you also received as its cost basis the fair market value of that property on the date of death. That being said, when you sell it for a price, you compare that sales price to the cost basis that was determined on the date of death. Generally, those two are very close together, and there is very little gain, unless you do a lot of upgrades to it, unless you have a bidding war over the property and people want to pay you more. That would be the only way generally that you're going to pay more on it than you would. It's usually a wash in most cases.
Okay. Could the estate have done anything to sell the house before the inheritance that would have bypassed this, Mary?
That's kind of an up in the air question.
Okay.
And I think what I mean by that is, if you follow technically the wording of the will and it says Dave gets the house, that means that the house goes to Dave. Now, if there, in some cases, you'll see that the estate will turn everything into cash and distribute the cash. But from a technical standpoint, if the house specifically came to him and not just the estate in general, technically, he's supposed to have the property transferred to him.
All right, there you go, Dave, and hope it helps. Let's go to Peter in Wauwatosa next. Peter, good afternoon.
Hi. I received a letter from the IRS telling me that my withholding is too low, so I'm now being penalized all the way back into 24. I paid about like 11. I got 1,100 in withholding and 9,200 in taxes. So I was wondering what kind of rule is there for how much withholding is necessary.
Okay, let me ask just a little bit back to you. The letter told you that you need to increase your withholding. Is that correct?
Yes, it did. Yes.
Okay. And you said something about 11,000 and 9,000. Let me know again what you said about the 11 and the 9.
1,100 in withholding from my pension, which is my only source of withholding. And I owed 9,200 in taxes.
All right. The letter from the IRS did not demand any payment, correct? It was an informative letter.
Well, I've been penalized back into 24 because I'm too low.
Okay. The tax return that we just finished filing or are in the process of finishing filing is the 24 tax return. So the letter from the IRS is telling you that we have the right, if you do not pay in at least 100% of the prior year's taxes, that would be the 23 tax, or if you did not pay in at least 90% of your 24 tax, then we, the government, have a right to penalize you. And the penalty is based on interest. It's a 7% interest rate. So the government is like a business. It needs to have money to operate. And that's why paying as you go, so to speak, your withholding is what is expected. So what they're saying to you, you didn't need either one of the exceptions. You didn't pay in 100% of the 23 tax, or you didn't pay in 90% of the 24 tax. Therefore, your tax bill is increased by interest on the money, so to speak. So you do not have to increase your withholding.
Huh.
However, every year that you don't, you get to pay extra tax in the form of interest.
So that would be
Does
more than
that you, answer your
yeah,
question?
That would be more than he would pay if he would just have 100% or 90 to 100% withholding to begin with, correct? Because you'd eliminate
right.
that interest.
It's a penalty, but another way of looking at it is you're borrowing money from the federal government at the rate of 7%. we want your money a little as you go. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do that, we're going to have an underpayment penalty. And the even if you file timely and paid the tax before April 15th, from the time that that tax was due to the time you filed, that's the borrowing of the money from the government. And in addition to that, the IRS does have the fact that if you owe less than $1,000, generally you don't have the underpayment penalty.
Okay.
So they have provisions, but they expect withholding in a timely manner.
Okay.
And if you don't want to do that, which there are people who always have a large government bill, but they have the borrowing cost or the extra interest onto it.
So,
imagine if everybody waited till April 15th to pay their tax bill. The government would have a hard time meeting its ordinary obligations.
Sure. So Peter should increase his withholding going forward then.
To avoid the penalty, yes.
Yep.
And if you are okay with paying that extra, then you don't have to.
Okay.
It's a decision that you can make with consequences.
As all decisions do have. Dennis in Afton, Minnesota, yeah. We'll go to you next. Good afternoon.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for sharing today. In terms of possible simplification, this is something I heard over public radio, that the country of Norway, what they do is they just send the citizens a notice. We know what your earnings are, and you're welcome to send them in. That sounds like a simplification, and they'll probably get everybody in the payment category.
Wait a minute. Let me get this right. In Norway, sure. They just send you a suggestion to send your taxes in. It's like if you want to, you can. Or
you can apply. This is what I learned over public radio. You can apply your conscience to it. This is what we believe you owe, and yeah, it's not a laughing matter because I think in this country, people probably do not apply their conscience to the payment of their taxes, and that's how we get a $1 trillion. Contribution to the 800 military bases in 80 countries. I think Norway is giving people a chance to apply their conscience.
Wow. What if we had a conscience clause in our IRS tax code, Mary?
Well, that would be very interesting. I'm interested to know, Dennis, does it say any consequences if they don't apply their conscience?
I don't have any more details.
It's very interesting.
It wasn't a total program about Norway.
Yeah, I appreciate the perspective because, I mean, you know, different nations, they have all got their own tax collection system, and whether or not ours is as robust and effective as it can be. Are there changes that we saw to the IRS as a result of the Big Beautiful Bill, Mary?
In my perspective, the Big Beautiful Bill did cause some changes for tax professionals. We have a part of the IRS that, there is a commissioner of the IRS that controls that, and there have been 7 changes since the passing of the Big Beautiful Bill, the signing of that. There have been 7 people that have gone through that office. We are on number 7 in this short period of time.
What's happening?
So from that perspective... disagreements with things. And it kind of tells you if you're working with the IRS and you're not getting answers to your questions, I think that there is unsteadiness or just they don't have the thing who's in charge worked out. And I think some things get dropped by the wayside. And so hopefully the IRS, which in my opinion, we need the IRS. Maybe there'll come a day when, you know, there have been ideas about not needing the IRS and finding a different way to collect taxes and things. But this is what we have for now. And people like Peter have questions about how come I'm being charged things. And you need people to be able to answer those questions and solve the things that are wrong. And so we need to have the IRS working for people the way it should. And I'm sure that means, you know, getting things straightened out, and hopefully that will happen.
So, and just to be clear here, we have seen a number of disruptions or changes, radical changes to the federal government in this year so far. And is there some degree of disruption inside the IRS from the perspective of tax professionals, Mary?
I think a lot of the tax professionals are thankful for the big, beautiful bill from our perspective, because if, from our perspective, had this not been passed, we would be telling people at the end of filing the 25 tax return, guess what? Your taxes are going to radically go up. So for us, that was a saving situation. The other thing for tax professionals, that the timing of the bill was wonderful. Because the bill was signed, a lot of tax bills get signed in the 11th hour, if you will, that we have had tax bills signed in December, in January, that made it retroactive, which caused a lot of unsettling in the filing community. So having this bill and having time to look at its provisions before the filing of the tax return that affects those and be able to have a perspective into the future is something we haven't had for a while.
Mary Mellum is with Schwabadon Tax Professionals, and she's taking your tax questions at 1-800-642-1234. With the changes and some certainty with a big, beautiful bill passage, you can also email us, talk@WPR.org. That's 800-642-1234 to ask your tax questions, or email talk@WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and you're listening to WPR News. If you have not subscribed to the WPR Daily Newsletter yet, well, I believe you're the last one. It delivers you trustworthy reporting, unique local stories right to your inbox. It's one a day, not going to stuff your inbox. It's all done by our own Jenny Peek, who is wonderful and provides must-listen audio segments, exclusive feature photos, behind-the-scenes conversations with reporters, and you get it all in your inbox just by signing up today at wpr.org/newsletters. Stay informed and connected without being overwhelmed. That's wpr.org/newsletters. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today. Mary Mellum, our guest, tax professional, 30 years experience, owner of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals, and inviting you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Before we get to the calls, Mary, I have a follow-up on the big, beautiful bill. Ellian Madison called but couldn't stay with us. She says that the big, beautiful bill is taking away energy credits, which make a big impact on her. What's happening to our energy credits?
Well, the energy credits in that were passed in the, I think they started maybe in 2002, something like that, were supposed to go through 32. I can't speak for all of the energy credits, but there are a number of them that it sounded really good, and it turned out that people didn't get to benefit from it as well as it sounds. Because the type of property that you had to buy. Now, windows and doors and things, maybe not so much, but furnaces and air conditioning, which are a lot of what the consumer buys. There were a lot of other energy credits beyond that. But what it did was to put a deadline on it. So some of the energy credits, I believe the vehicle is September 30th is the last of when you can purchase it. The end of the year is the last for windows and doors and insulation. So it's that timing. But as much as it sounds like we're not pushing energy, you know, by the production of the bill, a lot of my clients put in the furnaces and the air conditioning and didn't meet the standards so that they didn't benefit from it anyway. And the standards have been increasing each year with this bill to the point where if you didn't, like, windows had to be the right windows for your area, that I couldn't put in a window that would work in the south and put it in. And so there was a lot of knowledge that you had to have about buying the right product. And if you bought it and didn't know that, you didn't get the credit anyway. So, you know, I think it was more a kind of stabilizing the ship right now. And, you know, things change all the time. And this was taking it back for right now. And who knows what will happen. This isn't the first energy credit that we've had in tax law. There have been a number of them over the years. And who knows if we need them again, that they might not come back.
Let's go back to your questions now over the phone at 1-800-642-1234. We'll start with Sherry in Eau Claire. Sherry, good afternoon. Sherry, are you there?
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Hello. Yes, I'm wondering how much, what the percentage of taxes we'll have to pay when we're 73. Our income will still be about $75,000 if we're still working. But we'll have to start pulling money out, they said, from our 401k and things like that. What's the percentage you're going to have us pull out?
Well, the percentage, your required minimum distribution depends on how much is in your account. And the age 73 is when it starts. And there is a chart that is created, and if the chart changes each year, so theoretically, by the time you're 102, it's all gone, theoretically. But the divisor for IRAs or for your pension is 27.4 in the first year. So if you take the amount that you have in your IRA and divide it by 27.4, that will tell you how much you would have to pay, how much you would have to take out. Now, that added to the rest of your income puts you at a certain tax rate, and that's where you're at. And so I can't tell you that if you have to pull $10,000 out, you're going to have to pay 20% tax. You might have to pay 0%. You might have to pay 12%. It depends on the big picture of what you have.
Sherry, hope that helps, and thank you for calling. We'll go to Ivy in Evansville next. Ivy, good afternoon.
Hi. The money that went to energy efficiency didn't all come from tax credits. My brother in Maine, because they used the money to help people there with energy efficiency, he was on Medicaid, and he got a heat pump for $2,000, which I gave him the money. $8,000 was paid for by the bill that provided the money to Maine to do that. And so it might not appear in the form of taxes, but it did help people. And it's too bad it's gone, because poor people like my brother could get a form of heat that is not polluting, and, you know, for somebody who has COPD like he had, it's helpful. Also, yeah. I think what I'm hearing is that this tax bill just helped, by passing it, just helped the people who help people with their taxes. They're able to understand what's going on better. But I don't think, they could have passed a bill that kept the tax breaks for middle-class people but didn't give these huge tax breaks to millionaires. So it's not a great bill.
Ivy, I appreciate the call and the perspective. Thank you. We'll go to Charles in Oshkosh next. Charles, good afternoon.
Hello. I'm calling about historic rehabilitation tax credits for historic properties. I know there's state and federal laws on that. Are you familiar with those, how they work for homeowners or...
Charles, good question.
Little perspective on the Wisconsin side.
Yep.
And there is, and I can't tell you without looking it up, it may be a 10% tax credit, but Wisconsin certainly does offer a rehabilitation historical credit. It's a credit on your taxes. It also is one that if you don't use it all in 1 year, it is you're able to carry it forward.
Oh.
What I know about it is that there are certain specifications and certain paperwork that you have to do in order to do that. And, you know, certainly if you purchase a property that fits that condition and you follow those conditions, it's a nice credit. And, but, you know, you have to do the paperwork to get the certification and the paperwork to get through it. But Wisconsin does offer a nice credit.
Mary, the way you say the paperwork, it makes it sound like it might be onerous. The paperwork sounds like it might be more than a few pages.
What I'm saying is that it isn't a credit that when you come to fill out your taxes that you can say, oh, I did this and I get this credit. It is a process that you have to go through and that you have to have your property to make sure that it is a property that meets the definition of a historical property. And there is certification or paperwork to get to do that. There are also things that qualify as upgrades that are in that. And you have to do that before the fact of getting the credit. That's what I mean by that.
There you go.
And some people it's nothing, and other people it's over the top for them. It just depends on who you are. But there are provisions, and I believe that there are some at the federal level. I haven't seen those that I can think of. It's the Wisconsin ones that I've had more experience with.
Charles, thank you for the question. I appreciate it. We'll go to Bill in Wisconsin Rapids next. Bill, you're on the air with Mary Mellum.
Hello. I have a question about, is there an age that you don't pay taxes anymore?
Oh, please, Mary, say it so.
Is no.
Oh!
The answer is no. Now, that being said, there are 50% of the people do not pay any taxes. And that
income
is
taxes.
All conditioned. We're talking income taxes, yes. But that is conditioned on how much you have of income. And so if you have, let me give you an example. If you live on nothing but your Social Security, you will not pay income tax because the Social Security without other components is not taxable. If you live on income lower than the standard deduction, you will not pay any income tax. If you have a lot of income producing property, you can be 110 and still pay income tax.
Death and taxes, Bill. But that's the way it is. But it is a question I'm sure we've all asked at one point. Isn't there a point where we can stop? Probably not.
It is very funny in our practice when a person that has paid taxes for their entire life gets to the point where they do not have to file a tax return. And for those people, a number of them, that's a very unsettling thing. What do you mean I don't have to do a tax return?
Right. Isn't the IRS going to come after me? Yeah.
Yeah. And, it is unsettling. It's something we get in the habit of doing.
Uh-huh.
We might not like to do it, but we do get in the habit of doing it.
With that in mind, we have an October 15th deadline coming up from the IRS. Who should be paying attention to that, Mary?
Anyone who has not timely filed their income tax return for 2024, that is the deadline. And that being said, it is the deadline to avoid certain penalties. If you owe the government tax and you have a proper extension, which is an extension of time to file your tax return, not pay your taxes, you have to fulfill that extension by filing by October 15th.
Okay.
That being said, there are penalties like the underpayment of interest and failure to pay penalties. And if you have not filed the extension, there is a failure to file penalty. So all of those things go in together.
Yeah, mark your calendar if you haven't filed for last year's income taxes with the IRS yet. October 15th is the extension deadline without penalties and a price to pay. Mary Mellum is a tax professional from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Been in the tax business for more than 30 years. Answering your tax questions today at 1-800-642-1234 or by email at talk@WPR.org. What a service to have this opportunity to ask questions that are hard to get answers to just about anywhere else. So let's get your tax questions in before we're done today at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller, and you're listening to WPR News. Coming up tomorrow on The Larry Mueller Show, it is Garden Talk, and the author of The Cook's Garden joins us with recipes, freezing veggie tips, and canning tomatoes, and more. Also tomorrow on Garden Talk, Diana Alfuth returns to answer your questions about keeping your garden healthy and thriving through the fall. But right now, with the time we have left today on The Larry Mueller Show, Mary Mellum's with us answering your tax questions. She's the co-owner of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals, and I've got an email here from Paula in Oshkosh. Mary. She published a book of her husband's reflections after he died. He wrote these for church members. The books were then donated to their church as his gift to those who would like a copy. Does the cost of publishing qualify as a donation when she files her taxes in the new year?
That's an extremely good question. The creation of the books cost money. That gives them a cost basis. And if you are donating something to charity that that has a cost basis, it is generally the fair market value or the cost basis. So my answer would be yes.
All right. Barbie emailed us. They owed money due to a miscalculation and also owed interest. They agreed with their error and mailed their payment to St. Louis one full week before the due date. But the IRS says they received the payment a day late and charged a $170 penalty as a result. So Barb contacted the IRS, who were unbending, also contacted their congressperson, who couldn't do anything. When they mail their taxes, how do they determine how much time the mail will take? How do they know they're being honest about when they received the payment? Barb feels she mailed the payment in a timely manner by allowing a week from Wisconsin to St. Louis. Was she wrong?
That gets into another government agency,
unfortunately. Yes, it does. The USPS.
The post office. Uh-huh. Yes. So. It isn't an easy answer. I really feel sorry for her. I mean, I understand the frustration of this. And she certainly could file a request and ask for the penalty back based on reasonable cause. There is a form 843 that she could request that on. I don't know. You know, when you call the IRS and ask for that, you can get a lot of different answers depending on who you talk to. But filing a claim is a possibility. I don't know when you file a tax return and pay a debt, to prove that it is timely filed, the best way to do it would be to send, and I always get this mixed up, I believe it's called certified as opposed to registered letter.
Okay.
And a certified letter would give you an indication of when it's dated, and also the IRS would, you can send it such that the IRS, you have to have a signature, and it would prove that they received the mail. So if it happens again, I would be tempted to go to the post office and pay a little extra to get that date stamp that shows that's proof of when you mailed it and the letter that says we signed for it to see when it's received. That's the best advice that I can give you.
Perfect. Yeah. Spend a little more money to send certified mail to the IRS, especially if it includes some of your cash. And then save yourself the $170 penalty that Barb was had to incur.
It will give you more to fight with about it than not having anything to prove it. You know, it's not a guarantee, but it certainly gives you more to work with than not.
Let's go to Jerry in Kaukauna next. Jerry, good afternoon.
Yes, I have a comment, and then I have a tax question for a sole proprietor. But down here we call it the big cow pie bill. It really just keeps money going back to the billionaires. I believe 90% goes there, but the rest of the country hurts on services and, you know, government programs that help a lot of people. But my question now is, if you have a vehicle you use for business and you deduct the mileage of it, but you picked up another vehicle and might be retiring that first car, how does that work? And you're still going to keep it. You're not going to sell it.
Are you going to keep it for personal use?
Yes.
Okay.
If you have a business vehicle that is sold, and I know you're not selling this one, but in changing the vehicle from one to another, many people will sell that vehicle that's being put to rest. When you sell that vehicle, you have a sales price and you mark that against what you paid for that vehicle, cost basis, minus the benefit that you have gotten by taking the depreciation portion of your standard mileage rate. Or if you didn't use standard mileage rate and used actual, you would have that. And the difference between what you got out of it and what your cost basis after depreciation is the gain that you would pay. Or if it's business, you could even have a loss on it. Now, when you keep that vehicle, any depreciation benefit, either through the depreciation of standard mileage or the actual depreciation, stays with that vehicle, so that someday when you sell it, you would have to take that into consideration. If you keep that vehicle forever and finally junk it, chances are that the most that you would pay taxes on is the cost to junk it. That would be the most.
Okay.
So, and again, you need to keep records on the business use of the current vehicle. You need to keep records on the business use of the new one that you're using. So I hope that answered your question.
Jerry, and I appreciate you asking it. There's a follow-up here from Merica in Appleton about the Norway tax system. Merica says it's not exactly an honor system. The Norwegian government sends all taxpayers a pre-calculated tax bill, and people are able to accept or contest the amount. And the tax rates are very high in Norway, but there's a cultural consensus that everyone benefits from good schools, subsidized health care, clean environment, and efficient public services that taxes pay for. So there are different tax systems out there, but ours, and I believe we've had a couple callers refer to this, a new study out of UC Berkeley finds that America's richest citizens are papering over their earnings with losses and using other creative accounting strategies to shelter their fortunes, as the tax code perfectly allows them to do. It's completely legal, and as a result, the country's billionaires, according to this study new from UC Berkeley, country's billionaires pay lower tax rates than many of its millionaires, and they pay lower tax rates than many middle-class professionals. Some wealthy Americans, according to the study, do pay a tax rate exceeding 30% average. The paper also found that top laborers, people who depend on high wages for their income as opposed for capital gains or corporate profits, have a 45% effective tax rate, that according to the analysis. There seems to be a difference here between how taxes treat the money that we work for and the money that works for us, Mary, and there seems to be, from some folks who work for their money, some, I don't know, angst or contention about that.
Oh, I think we could have a philosophical discussion about all of this. And you know what? We would come away with, there are going to be opinions on both sides. I don't know the perfect answer to tax. All I know is whatever Congress passes, that's what we have to work with as taxpayers and tax professionals. Leading up to that might be other discussions, but it's pretty black and white in what we have to work with is what we have to do when it comes to tax filing.
But what about the fact that our tax system seems to provide breaks for capital gains and corporate profits as opposed to the tax rates for folks who are working for their money?
You know, I struggle with that. First of all, there is a statistic out there that says that a very large percentage of the taxes are paid by a very small percentage of the people. And that never seems to quite make it into the discussion. And also that 50% of the people do not pay taxes and they receive government aid from those that do pay taxes. So you can understand, you can play with all of those things.
But a lot of
the people who are middle class people rely on pension money to survive. If pensions weren't invested in the capital gain structure and the stocks, there wouldn't be money in the pensions for those people to be living on. So there's a big, you know, there is a big way to discuss this as far as do we need companies to provide jobs? I think the answer to that is yes. Do people who provide the investment for those companies expect a return on their investment? I think the answer to that is yes. I don't know how to make everybody happy. And that seems to be the bigger question. How could you have a system that made everybody happy? And, you know, over time, I'm old enough to remember that there has been a discussion about flat tax forever. And yet it's never come to be. And there's a lot of discussions about why that's never come to be. You know, some countries have a national sales tax so that, and that's how they raise money, so that if you want the yacht, you're going to pay a bigger tax because you want the yacht and I have the rowboat. But we don't, at this point, for whatever reason, this is the system that we have. And until that changes, we have to be good citizens and pay the taxes that are owed. You know, there is due unto Caesar what is Caesar's and due unto God what is God's and, you know, all of that. So I can only play with what the tax code offers.
Right. You've got to follow the rules as they are written. And the questions about where they are written probably are better asked to other guests. Mary Mellum is our guest for now, a tax professional from Green Bay. She's been in the business for more than 30 years and runs the Ishwaubenon Tax Professionals. Back to your questions and calls now for Mary. And we'll go to Diana in Sparta. Diana, good afternoon.
Hello. My question concerns a situation where a person is downsizing and donating items to charity. Would you speak to how a person should keep track of those items and determine their worth? And what limits would there be to that kind of donation, please?
That is an excellent question. The places like Goodwill, Salvation Army, if you go on their websites, they have a chart to help tell what the fair market value is. And when you are donating anything, it is generally fair market value that you're looking for, coming up with a value for it. And so, you know, knowing what a shirt and what shorts and slacks and dresses are, they do a good job of putting together a document that is helpful. And there are also software programs that you can look into that will help you with that. But here's some, first of all, for in-kind donations, you need to be able to itemize your deductions in order to benefit from those. That means Schedule A. But also, when it comes to donating stuff, there is a maximum $5,000 donation that can be done without having an appraisal. So if you are downsizing and have a lot of, you know, really nice furniture and you feel that it's worth more than $5,000, before you itemize, I mean, before you donate it, you need to have an appraisal of that, those things, so that it will benefit you on the tax return.
Perfect. Diana, thank you so much for asking. I'm sure you are not alone in that regard. Mary Mellum, a bigger picture question again for you here. When should somebody start considering shifting from doing their taxes online or with software to seeking out a tax professional? Where do you take that leap to begin to work with somebody as knowledgeable as yourself skip to just entering the boxes and calling that taxes?
Well, some people would say anytime I feel like I'm paying more than I should.
Mm.
And I don't mean that as I don't want to pay taxes, but that I might be missing out on something. I think it's a good idea to seek a professional. Now, if you have investments, if you're into cryptocurrency, if you have, different kinds of things like that, limited partnerships, rental property, a business, those are all times when you should seek help with it. And some people would say, even if I think I can do my taxes myself, you might want to consider once every 3 years to pay for a professional to make sure that you have time to fix, because there is a statute of limitation on getting a refund back on a return that is incorrect. And it's federal is a 3-year statute of limitations. Wisconsin has a 4-year statute of limitations. But some people have the idea that every 3 years I should make that investment just in case I made a mistake that I can't recover after that time.
And Mary, how often do you find somebody coming to you after using software or online tax systems for years? And how often do you find something that they didn't know existed to benefit them?
Mm-hmm. We do. Mm-hmm. We're in the position of not seeing a lot of new clients. We have a group of people that we work with, and typically we work with those people for a long, long time.
Nice.
So we don't see in our practice as many people. We get calls from people that get IRS letters, and that's where we hear from that and other tax professionals that there are times when questions can be misunderstood or things like that, and you have to clean up the pieces. And trying to clean up the pieces, getting a hold of people at the IRS to talk to, mm-hmm. is a little more challenging now than it used to be years ago. So all of those things, you know, point to a professional.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't be in this business or if there weren't people that wanted to come to a professional.
Mary Mellum, you are an amazing resource, and I thank you so much for keeping up to speed on all the changes to our tax code and making sure we are in the know. Thank you as always.
You are very welcome.
Mary Mellum from Schwabenon Tax Professionals with over 30 years experience, and I'm sorry we did not get to all the questions today. We could have done it all day. And I want to thank our team for putting it all together and making it possible for you today. Clara Neipert, Joel Patnaud, Jeff Robbins, executive producer Jill Nadeau. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today. Don't miss Garden Talk tomorrow from 11 to 1 right here on WPR News.